You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 14 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from my apartment in Bromfontein, VAF. The show will be back live again Friday. Today, chatting Nissen Nayar, banks and the Fashini Group buying Jet, Graham Koerner on biological assets and agri-investments, Dina Zoccolo on Section 12J, job creation and managing under lockdown. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines: MoneyWeb, City Lodge's disastrous BEE deal, Business Day, value of capital projects collapses, and the outlook is bleak. Morning markets, red everywhere. S&P off 0.9, NASDAQ down 2.1%. Asia, we got Sydney off 0.7 and Tokyo down 1.1%. Commodities red, oil off 2%, Rand 16.86, and the top 40 open call for about 1.3% down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
Chatting with Nissen Nayar, he of Sasfin Securities. Nissen, appreciate your time this morning. I want to touch on Fashini in a moment. Before I do, Fini 15, another strong day, up over 2% yesterday. This is as 91 cuts earning expectations by our banks by 50%. I mean, the Standard Bank is the lowest PE, I think, since the early 90s. But, you know, PE is great, but the E part, earnings, is going to come under pressure. The market is shaking it off and frankly, loving the banks right now.
Yes, Simon. You know, it always puts a smile on my face when the local shares do well, because it's been a forgotten part of the market, I think.
Yeah.
The financial index is the only index that's down this year, believe it or not. You know, industrial and resources were powering ahead in the face of the pandemic. And financials that house the banks, the insurers, the property companies to a smaller extent, and of course, you know, some industrial shares like the retailers, were also quite weak throughout this year. So a big improvement, and I think one that, we all welcome. But of course, doesn't really reconcile with the fact that we're still in the midst of a pandemic. We've got infection rates that are spiking beyond, what we would have thought 3 or 4 months ago. I suppose there are bargain hunters out there. You mentioned Standard Bank being on a low PE. Of course, earnings are going to trough. Remember that in the way the market often works is that, you know, when earnings have troughed, PEs tend to spike because, you know, the buyers start coming in at that stage. And I think maybe perhaps that's what we're beginning to see now. The market certainly believes that earnings have troughed and that, you know, we're going to see a strong recovery from here.
Yeah, it's a good point. Markets looking to 2021 and beyond. They're not focusing on July 2020 at this point. Let's touch on that Fashini Group deal, buying Jet and almost a $4 billion rights issue. The Jet deal, they're paying what? $480 million. They get 371 stores, 80 million stock. To me, it actually looks like not a bad deal at all. Am I missing something, or Fashini Group got a proper sort of swooped in and got a good deal here?
I think they did. I think very few buyers out there in general, and in particular for, Edcon assets. So a decent enough deal. I think it's a good result for Edcon as well. And specifically for some of the property companies that, you know, ended up taking Edcon shares a few years ago. You saw Property had a fight yesterday as well. And I attributed only to the Fashini news, because that was really the only news that was out there. At least there are some buyers that are willing to pay at reasonable, hopefully reasonable prices for some of the Edcon assets. Jet, we know, was one of the better assets. If you cast your mind back a few years ago, you know, the Jet does give Fashini a inkling into the low end market that Mr. Price used to dominate for all those years. And now, of course, Fashini, obviously unable to grow in its own segment, went overseas. That mixed success, I think, really with that. Probably one of the better performers, but still, I don't think they really achieved what they wanted to achieve. But this deal with Jet now gives them the ability to compete in that low-end market, which I think, you know, 371 stores, they said in the announcement, we cannot build this organically. It's too expensive. We'd rather buy it. And I think, you know, $400-500 million is a small price to pay for such good assets in the long term.
Yeah, and I like your point about the property. Not only do they have shares in Edcon, but of course they've got, well, 371 stores that will now continue to pay rentals. The last question, MTN, a stormer of a day yesterday, up 6%. I see oil down overnight. Do we still look at MTN as a quasi-oil stock because of Nigeria being their biggest market and, of course, Nigeria being a oil economy? Or is this just really just a price action and look at, you know, market looking at valuations on MTN, which are right now cheap?
Simon, I think it's a combination of both. I still think that it's a proxy for the oil price. It's a geared exposure to the oil price because of, obviously, Nigeria, but also to an extent Iran as well, big oil producing nation there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the ability of these countries to be able to pay Forex, in other words, MTN dividends across to the group in South Africa, is based entirely on what the oil price does. So you saw a nice recovery with the oil price in the last 2 to 3 months. And with that, an MTN share price kind of recovered, although it lagged a little bit recently. I think maybe it's playing a little bit of catch up. But from a valuation perspective, I think, you know, still unreasonable valuation. I think it's probably got a little bit more to go. A lot depends on what happens on that oil price, though.
Yeah, we'll be watching oil. Brent under 42, but still holding above 40, and West Texas just under. But of course, Brent is the price that matters most for them. Nesenai Sasfin Securities, really appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective. I wanted to talk to him around biological assets, which would be your timber at York, your fruit trees and nut trees at Cook's Brothers, sugarcane at Tongaat. He says not chickens, they're much more industrial. Graham, appreciate your time. We're going to go down some rabbit holes here, but to start with biological assets, I mean, the trick, and I went through the Cook's Brothers statements, and I've seen it with York and the timber in the past, is the revaluations, which are an annual process to a degree, going through the income statement, they can make things a bit messy. And truthfully, I suspect probably we should sort of remove them from the process to get that clean picture.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Simon. The income statements, when you're forced to do a fair value adjustment on biologicals, can make the income statements, you know, a bit of sort of creative writing. But I think the interesting thing is one of two things. I think, firstly, you go and look at what the underlying ops are doing, mm-hmm. because, of course, that gives you a license to hold those biological assets for a period of time and to really unlock the underlying value. But the more important thing is to actually go and look at what those underlying biological assets are, and secondly, what the long-term potential of them is. Because if you take York, for example, which is one I'm a lot closer to, mm-hmm. you know, the biological assets are nothing more complex than pine trees sitting, yeah. you know, mainly in Mpumalanga. The trees obviously are taken up mainly by the construction industry and things like roof trusses and, of course, increasingly plywood in sort of more specialist construction. But that's really what it is. And the fair value basically says, you know, I've got a tree, a sapling that is a year old, and I've got a tree that's 5 years old and a tree that's 17 and 20 years old. And each of them have a value. And basically, you're looking at what you think those log prices will be at any point in the future. And I think that was a big part of our investment hypothesis for York, is that we believed that the timber companies, in terms of the producers and the sawmills, were getting the short end of the stick, no pun intended, because they were effectively having to absorb margin pressure, whereas the retailers and the reworkers were getting more of it. So effectively, what we are saying is, if you take, you know, York timber, of course, there's a current portion of the biological assets. That's really the stuff that's going to be harvested quite soon, circa 20-year-old trees, and then you've got, you know, much younger trees, but effectively all of them have got a discounted value. And in the case of York, it's circa 3 billion rand. And that translates into an asset value of about 10 rand a share, and the thing's trading at 90 cents. So I think that's what I was trying to say, is that is the underlying value. And those trees have real value. And as, I mean, my hypothesis is always they can stop all future planting, basically just whittle the business down and literally just harvest and saw, and they'll get back, call it 10 rand a share, but it might take them a few years. And that's, I think, the important thing. But I think out of all the biological plays, I think trees are probably the most real, because they are really long lifespan. Things like climate change and other things that can impact the real long-term biological value of those assets will play out over many years. Whereas in sugarcane, you know, you've got a good crop, but they a year, 18 months, 2 years, and you recycled. And as I say, I think, you know, chickens is an industrial asset. You know, they're raised for 6 weeks, can't live much beyond 6 weeks and 2 days. And yeah, it's really just an industrial science. Whereas, yeah, I think things like fruit trees, you know, whether it's macadamias in Crooks Brothers or pine in the case of York, those are real biological assets.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, if York only gets half the price for their trees, that's still $5 a share, sitting at currently, as you say, 90 cents a share. I want to take a quick pivot here. We were talking before we hit record, agri assets generally, and the theme for them is, I think, as an investment case, twofold. One is growing population globally, certainly, and secondly, more local, is we're seeing a number of our sort of agri and quasi-agri, and I'm throwing Pioneer as a sort of a brand Pioneer more than an agri, but Clover and others being delisted off our markets in what should be actually a really attractive investment space.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, you know, years ago, AFGRI was taken out by an American group. You know, Clover, of course, by an international play. Pioneer, more recently, by PepsiCo. So the interesting thing is, I think other people see the value in being at the bottom of the food chain, so to speak. And it's difficult to get, you know, the soil and the maize, but you can get close, you know, through things like Crooks and York. And you can also get quite close through something like Zenvest and, of course, Zeta, which is the PSG agri play, you know, where you know historically would have had Capespan and assets like that. So I think it's impossible, almost impossible, to get right to the bottom, to the land ownership and the maize production, but you can get fairly close in co-ops and these other guys. And we believe that food security is another strategic play, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, we historically have held Zenvest, although it's unlisted, for our clients, because, you know, those silos are incredibly valuable, and they're a proper player in that space. And if food security becomes a kind of a global theme, courtesy of what we believe a lot of this is based on the hypothesis of climate change, then, yeah, the reality of all of this is there's some good value to be had there.
And I mean, it's the food security, we get that. I mean, and there's issues around droughts and the like. So it's going to be a little bit cyclical in terms of that. But I mean, that almost kind of plays its way out of the process. And truthfully, when a drought happens, typically prices go up, which compensates for some of that sort of reduced perhaps capacity because of drought.
Yeah, so if you take York, and of course this has become like the York punting show, but it's a company we know quite a lot about. And in fact, the climate change story plays into their hands, because if their average tree is 8 years old and climate change is going to affect us exponentially, and you've already seen government not renew old forests, because obviously we're a very, very arid country and we really should not be growing massive amounts of lumber. So, you know, the guys who've got it in the ground and they are 7, 10, 15 years old, those are very, very valuable assets. Of course, there's been a lot of dumping from elsewhere in the world, but you've seen, if you take somebody like York, and I think this is the critically important thing, is you know, the leadership and the technical people at York. It's not like they say, oh, well, we just grow trees and that's it. You know, there's a lot of science into being able to harvest trees earlier, you know, in terms of splicing the technology and
We lost Graham, but we got his point. And I know the one thing I learned very much from Chris Kitter, obviously Astral, which Graham was referring to there, it is very much a science. This is not just go and stick something in your garden and everything will be fine. It is a proper science in that sense. We'll leave it there. Graham Kerner from Kerner Perspective.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Dino Sokolo. He's chairman of the 12J Association of South Africa. Dino, appreciate your time. As the 12J Association, you've done a fairly, actually very comprehensive report into 12J. Now, this is obviously where people can invest into assets and they get tax benefits as a result. And I'm going to delve into that part. That's very much a February story. You did find some great data. $9 billion in the 5 years to February 2020, of course. A lot of that February 2020 money not yet being able to be deployed because of COVID-19. But the key point, perhaps for me, jobs created at about 126,000 a job. A lot of listeners might think that's a big number, but truthfully, compared to what we typically see for the cost of jobs, that's actually coming in at a really good value.
Yeah, Simon, thanks very much for having me. I think this work that the 12J Association of South Africa has done is a real watershed moment for the industry, because much, to your point, has been spoken about the attractiveness of the 12J tax benefit, but very little has been known about the actual industry, where the money's gone, how many jobs have been created, and so on and so forth. You're 100% right. We, according to our members, have created about 10,500 jobs at an average cost per job of 126,000 rand. But more importantly, you know, when you take the fact that a lot of the jobs that have been created are in small to medium-sized businesses, many of which are startups, the reality is that these businesses are in their infancy and they should still grow. And when you apply accepted economic multipliers into the industries of investment in the sector, you'll understand that should we carry on our current trajectory, we could create up to 45,000 jobs at an implied cost per job of 30,000 rand and below. And so really the way we see it as industry in Section 12J is that what government have actually done, yes, they've given upfront tax deduction, but when you think about it, the underlying investee businesses pay tax on income, they pay VAT on income, there's PAYE in the system, there's dividends tax and so on and so forth. What government have done is they've found a way to co-opt private sector into making investments into SMMEs, and actually the ecosystem pays for itself, because the sum of the taxes collected in the system over a period of time should exceed the actual deductions initially granted.
That's a great point. And another point that was made in the report is that, yeah, of the 9 billion, this is 9 billion that has now been invested locally, 25% of it outside of the major metros. In other words, it's really getting out into the economy. And oftentimes that 9 billion might have gone into the JSE, and not to disparage them, that's the sort of lazy capital in a sense. But I mean, further to that, it might also have gone offshore, in other words, have left the country.
100%. I mean, if you look at the nature of a Section 12J investor, and the report shows, the majority of them are ultra high net worth individuals, to a lesser degree, companies and trusts. But the truth is that in the current context, the vast majority of ultra high net worth individual capital is going offshore. And so really what Section 12J has been for those investors is an efficient mechanism to convince those investors to retain their capital in South Africa for a minimum period of at least 5 years. And what we did is we posed the question to our members in the Section 12J industry, of the 9.3 billion that you have raised collectively, how much do you believe to have been incremental? In other words, had it not been for the attractiveness of the tax deduction and then the investment in the underlying SMMEs, would that money have still gone there, Simon? And the answer was approximately 82%, or 7.6 billion of the 9.3 billion raised, in our members' views, is incremental.
Yeah, and that is absolutely a giant number. I imagine, however, there is a spanner in the works, and that is the pandemic. Particularly, I mean, a lot of this money went into hospitality, hotel keeping, and the like. Lockdown has not helped. Have you had much feedback from members on how they're managing under the pandemic scenario?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is the pandemic has been exceptionally difficult for the hospitality sector. And to your point, there has been a significant degree of 12J capital that's gone into hospitality, which, as an anecdote, is one of the largest employment creators in the country. I think the impact on our members varies. You know, some of the hotel assets have been pivoted and used as isolation facilities, quarantine facilities. Mm-hmm. And in those instances, the hotels are carrying on. I mean, it's not great, but they're carrying on. Others have taken more pain and are closed. And those are the likes of, you know, your sort of lodges in outlying areas and so on and so forth. I think the one thing to say, though, is that whilst there has been much money invested into the hotel industry through 12J, there is still money available. And I think the one silver lining to this is that not only is 12J a five-year investment, which allows investors to be patient with their capital, but hopefully the money that managers retain and are still sitting on should be sufficient in some instances to provide much-needed liquidity to those businesses, although it comes at a price. And that price is a reduced valuation, and reduced valuations mean dilution.
Yeah, and truthfully, to your point, I mean, it's not just 12J companies who have found it hard. Pandemic is hard for planet Earth. We'll leave it there. I encourage listeners, 12jassociation.co.za. You can go find the report. If you have invested, if you've ever thought about investing, it makes for a really, really great read. Dina Zakola, chairman of the 12J Association of South Africa, appreciate the time. We'll chat again.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. You'll find the podcast every morning from 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, or wherever good podcasts are aggregated. Chat to us on social media. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. A massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.